We're going to start at the top of Lamed Vav Amud Aleph, but just before we start, I wanted to just mention two important Tosfotim from yesterday that we didn't get a chance to get to at the end of the Shir. There's one Tosfot at the bottom of Lamed Hey Amud Bet. Tosfot discusses the issue of Bari Veshema. Over there, generally, we have a principle when it comes to Bari Veshema that Bari Odif, that we listen to the Bari. So over here, we establish that the Mishnah is talking about a case of Bari Veshema. Then why don't we use, or why don't we invoke the general principle of Bari Veshema? So that's the Tosfos ask in the Mishnah Midasefa. He says, Vim Tomar, the name of Bari Veshema, Bari Odif, right? And he brings a proof to this. So how come over here we don't say such a thing? He says, Kid Amar Yehuda Begozal Vatro, Mani Libi Odecha, I have 100 zuz that I lent to you, or I gave to you, V'halo Omer, Eini Yoda. The other person says, I don't know. V'ish Lomar Dehatam, he says, over there we say the person who's making the claim, the Toveya, is making a claim of Bari, that you definitely have my money. And the Deva says, maybe, I don't know if I have it. And over there we say that he has to pay the money, that the Bari Odi. So why don't we say the same thing over here? If someone is making a Bari claim, and the other one's making a Shema claim, how come the Bari is not Odi? Why is the person making the definitive claim? Why don't we say we go after the definitive claim over here? So Tosfos explains that not all Bari and Shemas are created equal. And that's what he points out over here. Because the Hatzam, in the case over there later on, right, in the Masechta, have a Bari Tov. It's an excellent Bari. That definitive claim carries a lot of weight. Why? She'er lo yeh lo panim l'shaker. He has no way that he can lie. She'kevin she'chaver yechol le'edah v'shikro. That, right, so he can know, when he makes a definitive claim and says, I gave you 100 zuz, or I lent you 100 zuz, the party, the other nitva, the other party knows whether he did receive it or he did receive the money, and he can counterclaim against him, say, no, you didn't, or I never got that money. Lo yid vari me'olam. So he has the ability to make a counterclaim. So when he makes that definitive claim, that definitive claim is with the knowledge that the other party can object or disagree with him. Shema enoto. And the maybe of the recipient also is a weak maybe. Why? Shein zocherim chayavlo. He says, I don't remember if I really owe you the money or not. So that almost strengthens the definitive claim of the claimant, because he's saying, oh, you owe me money, so I don't know.
I mean, it's almost murder mikveh.
Right, really. Right, in a sense.
He's not sure if he doesn't know.
Right. So then that sense that he has a Bari claim, that Bari is a very strong Bari. But over here in our claim, listen to what's the claim here. Alahacha Bari Shelo Garua. The Bari claim in our case is a much, much lower form or standard of Bari. Why? Because when the mazik comes along, or the mazik's shore is running along, and he's chasing the other shore, and then he comes along and says, you know what, your shore got damaged by a rock that it hit, not by my shore. So he makes a Bari claim. He's making a definitive claim that my shore didn't do it, the rock hurt it. But b'chein, what is he toying Bari? Because he knows that the other person can't answer him. Why can't the other panzer him? Hainami dekamar shema l'fishlo ra'ahamaseh. Because the Nizak wasn't there. He didn't see it. And that's the whole reason he says maybe. It's not because he, in the case of the loan, he's saying maybe because either he forgot or he's kind of avoid being chayav for the money. But he was there. He was a party to the transaction. So he has to know the information. So his shema is a weak shema. Over here, the reason that the Nizak is saying his shema is because he wasn't there. He really doesn't know. If he really doesn't know, right, then first of all, his Shema is not a weak Shema. And number two, the Bari, the definitive claim by the Toveya, is not such a strong claim.
It's more like by the money, his Shema is Pogaya his own claim. But over here, his Shema is Lomar Lomori. It's not Pogaya his own claim, because he just doesn't know.
He honestly doesn't know, and also doesn't help the Bari individual, because, right, his definitive claim is all because he knows that the other party can't lie. So it's very interesting. Tosfos of here establishes an important principle of Bari and Odif, that when we say Bari and Shema and Bari Odif, that's talking about a Bari when the Bari has tokif to it, when it's strength to it. That Bari has to come with the possibility of a counterclaim, or a possibility of someone else being able to answer his claim, that definitive claim. If he can make a definitive claim without anybody else being able to counter that argument, then we say that Bari doesn't come with that type of tokif. And the same thing with the Shema. If the maybe comes because you just can't know, if you can't know, then your Shema doesn't weaken your claim, right? It doesn't affect you, it doesn't help the Bari claim. On the other hand, if your Shema weakens your position because you should have known or you should have been there, then it also strengthens the Bari claim on the other side. That was one important Tosfos. The other important Tosfos is at the top of Lamed Vav Amud Aleph. That Tosfos discusses, we have now, the Gemara discussed four cases in the Mishnah. And the Gemara answered or gave or set up each of these cases in a different instance, right? The Gemara set up a case of Shema and then Bari and Shema, and then Ra'ui Lo, right? And then the case of Tafas, and the case of Tafas. So now, the Tosfos wants to know in the end, what does this all mean? So first of all, when we discuss this, Ra'ui Lo, right, we say that Ra'ui Lo, that he was Ra'ui, according to Rashi, Ra'ui Lo means that they told, if he brings a raya, it would have been good for him. But now that he didn't bring a raya, he doesn't get it. Tafas, if he grabs it, then that's good. Now, that's the way Rashi learns Ra'ui without Tafas. Tosfos learns Ra'ui, but Tafas means, perish Ra'ui Li Tol im Tafas. Not Ra'ui Li Tol if he brings a raya, but Ra'ui Li Tol means that he's empowered to take it if he grabs it. Right, that's his advantage. I saw that Rabbi Yosef also gives an interpretation that it says Ra'ui Li Tol, had he made a Bari claim. Had he made a Bari claim, he would have been Ra'ui Li Tol, but because he made a claim of Shema, right, then he doesn't have the ability to claim over here. So now, what are the cases? Now we have four different cases of the Mishnah. What Chidushim, right, are they coming on? So bringing along. So yesterday we mentioned the fact that why didn't the Gemara answer up Bari and Shema in these latter cases? Because Rashi says then, what's the Chiddush in the latter half of the Mishnah? So that's why we switched from saying Shema and Bari and Bari and Shema to saying Ra'ui Li Tol v'Tafas. But now, what's the Chiddush of all these cases in the Mishnah? There are four cases now. So now, if you look in Tosfos, it says, by Tosfos it says, V'hashka ikas richusa. It's about the middle of the narrow lines in the first Tosfos. It's opposite, right above the Rabbeinu Chananel, where the Rabbeinu Chananel is, it says, V'hashka ikas richuta b'kuhu bavei d'masnitsan. Now, each part of our Mishnah is necessary to teach us something. Dereisha Ashmina. The first case in the Mishnah teaches us, Afilu Mazik Shema v'Nizak Bari. Even the first case is where the Mazik makes a Shema claim, and the Nizak makes a Bari claim. Plige Rabbanan Aleid Sumchus. In that case, even there, the Rabbanan disagree with Sumchus, right? And say that Sumchus over there says that they split it. It's Mamon Amutal B'Savik. They split it. And then Nizak is the one making the Bari claim. So it seems to be that the halacha should be like Sumchus in that case, because the Nizak has a definitive claim. Nevertheless, the Mishnah teaches us that the Chachamim argue even in that instance and say, Amotzi Mechavero, Alav Haraya. Despite the fact that Nizak is making a Bari claim, and the Mazik is saying, Shema, still, we demand a Raya in order for him to collect according to Chachamim. Amotzi Mechavero, Alav Haraya. Now, Fahahu, the second case in the Mishnah, the Totan Begodol, the case where you have a big shore and a small shore chasing after them, Mashmi Enu. Afilu Nizak Shema, it's the opposite case, where the Nizak says Shema, and the Mazik says Bari, Polik Sumchus. In that case, even Sumchus disagrees, meaning that now it makes more sense like the Chachamim. The Mazik is making a Bari claim, right, and the Nizak is only saying maybe. So if that's the case, we should give the advantage to the Mazik, and we should say, Amotzi Michavero Lavaraya. Despite that fact, Sumchus still says, it's Mamar Amutal Basavik, and they are Chokim, they split. That's the Chiddush in the second case of the Mishnah. Now the third case of the Mishnah, of Echad Tam V'Echad Mu'ad, case of one Tam and one Mu'ad, Ashmi Inu, that comes to teach you, the Afilu the Rabbi Akva, that even according to Rabbi Akva, right, we had that yesterday, Dami Bridge Perakam Bokha Perot, Gamala Ukher, Benagmalim Yazush Zeroko. We have one wild camel that's jumping up all over the place around the other camels, that we can assign the culpability for any damage done to that one animal. It's evidence that that animal caused the damage. So Rav over here, we should say the same thing over here. We have a Tam and a Mu'ad. We should automatically assign the culpability to the Mu'ad, because it's more likely that the Mu'ad did damage. So over here we say, Moses, Rav Akiva agrees in our case, Achad, the Lo Talinim B'Mu'ad. We don't assign the blame to the Mu'ad. Came in the Shnehem Ratzim. Because you have evidence that points to both of them possibly doing the damage. You have a Tam running, and you have a Mu'ad running. So there's no reason to say the Mu'ad did it more than the Tam. The Tam stationary and the Mu'ad's running, then again, the evidence points to the fact that the Mu'ad did the damage. But here we have the Tam also running, it's already weakened the position that we assign it to the Mu'ad. Bahach. Right, and then, the Nizokin, right, Shnayim, in the case where two people get injured, right, the Nizokin Shnayim, where there's two perpetrators and two injured, right, Ashminu, the Nitfas Shakil, or the Tafas Shakil. And that's the last Chiddush of the Mishnah, that's the last one. We come along and said that if you're Tofes, the animal, then what he's Tofes, he keeps. right? According to at least what the mazik admits to, then he's whatever he's tofes, then he is mazik. Tosfos gives us explains to us why it's necessary for the Mishnah to have four different cases, and each case teaches us a chiddush or something that we otherwise would not have known. All right, now beginning at the two dots, beginning of Lamed Vav Aleph, we're going to continue with the Mishnah. Right, the Mishnah says Ayush Shneim Shal Ish Echad. If they belong to one individual and they were chasing after them, then Shnehem Chayavim. They are both Chayav. So yes, Daniel asks, wait, what do you mean Shnehem Chayavim? I mean, only one of them did the damage. What does it mean Shnehem Chayavim? Zamarle Rova Mi Parzika the Ravashi Shvaminov Shvarim Tamim Sheziku. That Shvarim Tamim that do damage, Ratzami Zegova, Rashi, the way Rashi interprets this, means that each one of them is, they are jointly culpable for the damage here. That means, Avadachad, if one of them is lost now, or gets lost, or something happens to one of them, Tam Chavero Bim Kamo. The other one stands in his place, Shemishtale Meimenu. Tam only pays me Gufo. Right, so over here you have two animals. If one of them disappears, the other one will become a replacement, and you will take it out of the goof of the second animal. Gemara says, wait a minute, is that really the case? How come I skin and muadim? No, let's just say that the case is here, you have two shvarim muadim. Gemara says, if you set up the case of muadim, ema seifa. How are you going to explain the seifa of the Mishnah if you explain that our Mishnah is talking about cases of muadim?
When the Gemara says, how come I skin and muadim, what's it suggesting? That both of them are chayiv and the Baal has to pay twice?
No, that by muadim you don't have this conclusion. By Tom pays me gufo. So when Tom pays me gufo, it's relevant that both animals are held culpable for the damage.
Yes,
by muad, it's irrelevant whether both animals are culpable because the person who's obligated is the person. I mean, it comes from the estate. The animals are just collateral towards the payment, but by muad, there's no issue if one of them gets lost, he has to pay from the other one. He has to pay from all of his possessions. All of his possessions now are encumbered towards this nezek. So now the Gemara says, well, Ema Seifa, if you're going to set it up as Muadim, what are you going to do with the second part of the Mishnah? Hayah echad gadol ve'echad katan. It's one big and one small. Hanizak omer gadol hezik, v'amazik omer lo, ki ela katan hezik. Right, the Nizak says it's the big one that did the damage. And the Mazik says, no, it's the little one that did the damage. Amosim echavero alav arayo. Right, when things are different, it's a raya. Ibu Muadim, mein afkalei mino. Right, what's the difference to him? I mean, here they're arguing about whether it was the big one or the small one that did the damage. What's the difference if it was a muad? If it's a tam, I understand the difference because your nezek is kept out by the goof of the animal that did the hezek. Right? The mazik, the animal, will be the animal which you can collect from. So if it's a gadol or a katan, it makes a difference. But if you're talking about muadim, he should be indifferent whether it was the big one or the small one. So, d'mei torah ma'ayah by the shlumei. The mazik is on the hook for all the damage that was done, irrespective of what the size of the animal or which animal did the damage. So why should there even be an argument between the mazik and izak with gadol and katan if you're talking about muadim? That case is talking about a case of tam. The case before is talking about a case of muad. Right? If you're talking about muadim, I have another problem. All right, sure, it's muadim, but what does shnehem chayavim mean? Chayavim sounds like that the animals somehow have some relevance to the payment over here. That's not the case. The case is what? Chayavim? Chayav gavra mi boyle. Who's the only one who's obligated here? The owner. The Baal is the one who's there. So it should say chayav. What? Chayavim makes a reference to the animals to suggest that somehow the animals have something to do with the payment over here. Vitu, my shnehem. Forget about the word chayavim in plural. The word is shnehem. Why are the two shvarim, they're again irrelevant to the payment? The payment is an obligation of the Baal, of the Adon. Irrespective of what animals are involved or who was involved, he's got to make the payment. Eli Olam Bitamim. I have to explain that case. That's Bitam, otherwise it makes no sense. It makes no sense to say, first of all, Shnei Chayavim, which is a reference to the Shvarim, because that's only relevant by Tam. And number two is Shnehem. You can only talk about two animals being culpable when you're talking about Tamim. Rabbi Akiva, who? Ah, it's Rabbi Akiva, Dame Shutfim Ninu. That they are Shutafim. Vitaimo, Itnuhu, the Tarvayu. Right, that's only when both of them are present. That's what it means, Shneem Chayavim. Shneem Chayavim means that when both of them are around, then we can obligate the Baal to pay for the damage. Velo Masi Medachile, because he can't push him off. Avalit Nehuder Tavayu, both of them are not present. Masi Armale, the Mazik can say to him, Zil Aiti Raya, the High Torah Azkach, Vashalem Lecha. Means that the Mazik can come and say, listen, we don't know which one of these two did damage. Right? And according to Rabbi Akiva, we are shutafim in the animal that did the damage. If that's the case, then we're not sure which animal. If one of them disappears, the mazik can say to Nizak, listen, the animal that did the damage is gone. That's the animal that you were supposed to collect from. It's no longer with us here. Prove to me that you have the ability to collect from this other animal. So according to Rabbi Akiva, right, where you're shutafim in the animal, then your right is only to collect from that particular animal because that's what you're shutafim. Therefore, if one of the animals disappears, the mazik can say to Nizak, bring me a proof that it wasn't your animal didn't just disappear. The one we are shutafim in didn't just disappear. On the other hand, this is the way Rashi learns. On the other hand, Rabbi Shmuel, what does Rabbi Shmuel believe? Rabbi Shmuel believes that the chov devolves upon the baal, right, on the owner of the animal, right, but the animal is directly collateral towards that loan. So according to Rabbi Shmuel, it's irrelevant if one of the animals disappears, because still, the gavra, the individual, is the one that's obligated, and the individual who's obligated still has to pay the money, even if the collateral disappears. So that's the way Rashi learns. Rashi learns our sugi again, that there were two shvarim that were running after one shore. Both, we're not sure which one of them did the damage. So the Gemara's Havamina is that they both will be held jointly culpable for the damage. The Gemara rejects that idea and says, no, that the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Akiva. And the reason that you are able to collect payment is only because both of them are present. Because when both of them are present, then we know for certain that one of the two you are entitled to get payment from. Therefore, you can take payment. On the other hand, if one of them disappears, right, there's a risk, right? If one of them disappears, there's a risk that the Nizak, or that the Nizak really can say to the Mazik, listen, we only one of these two damaged. How do you know that the one that's remaining here is the one that did the damage? Maybe the one that's gone now is the one that did the damage, and that's the one we are shutafim, that we are partners in. And therefore, you're out of luck. On the other hand, Rabbi Shmuel believes, what? That the obligation goes on the Adon, the Baal of the animals, irrespective of which animal did the damage. And therefore, if one of the animals disappears, maybe you've lost your collateral, but that doesn't mean that the obligation has disappeared. That's the way Rashi learns the
Sugya. And Chayavim applies to?
What?
The word Chayavim applies to the two
Shvarim, that if they're both present, then you will get payment. If they're not both present, then you're not Chayav, meaning that they won't be able to pay for it because it's a Mosi Mechavero of Harayim. Now, Tosu says, wait a minute, you can't suggest, this doesn't make any sense. He says, first of all, right, he says that he could have asked the question from the rest of our Mishnah, right, meaning that if you say, based on the way the Gemara started, that you have two, it's two tamim, and then they did damage, and they should be jointly culpable, there are parts of the later part of the Mishnah show that there isn't such a case, when two animals are safek, whether they damage, we don't say, oh, therefore we assign culpability to both of them, right, we only assign it to one of them, it's clear from the second half of the Mishnah. So Tosfos says the case here that Mark's talking about is when they both did damage. They jointly did damage to the animal. Wait a minute, that's not the case in our Mishnah. That's right, Tosfos says it isn't the case in the Mishnah. But nevertheless, it's talking about because of Lashon of Shneim Chayavim, it comes to teach us that there is a case where you can have two animals that are Chayav. And what is that? That's when I know for certain that both of them did damage. Now that's what the Gemara says here. When I know both of them did damage, right, then the Havamina of the Gemara is that Shneim Chayavim, that they'll both be jointly culpable when they both do damage for this, and therefore, what, that you'll have to be able to take both animals. Then what are we going to, how do we explain the answer of the Gemara point of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel? So that's what Tosu says. Tosu says that the Gemara in the end says this is only according to Rabbi Akiva, and not according to Rabbi Shmuel, as opposed to Rashi who says, right, or I mean, according to Rashi, right, we have to set up our Mishnah like Rabbi Akiva because according to Rabbi Shmuel it doesn't apply. And then Tosu says, no! That the case is that Mishum Hachi Muki like Rabbi Akiva. Why is the Gemara set this up like Rabbi Akiva over here? Shum the Rabbi Shmuel ain't Shum Chiddush. There's no Chiddush according to Rabbi Shmuel. The Pshita the Ibeit Chutei Kesher Avad Echad. One of them disappears. He's lost his rights. Came into Baal Chovu because he is a Baal Chov. And since he's a Baal Chov, when one of them disappears, now he's lost his rights to collect from that collateral. Of all the Rabbi Akiva, the Shutvei Ninu. According to Rabbi Akiva, you are partners in the animal. I would have thought that one of them belongs to Nizak, and the Nizak can make the claim that yours is lost and mine is still here. Right? So then it comes along the Gemara and says, no, even according to Rabbi Akiva, once one of them is missing, you can no longer collect. You can no longer collect because the shutafut doesn't work like that. The shutafut doesn't work where I get one of the animals and you get one of the animals and mine's still here. Rather, we're jointly partners in both animals. Since we're jointly partners in both animals, your animal also left here. I mean, the exact animal also left. All right, so now, it's more complicated. both because it's not found in the Mishnah, number one, that they both damage him simultaneously, and number two is his explanation of Rabbi Shmuel is somewhat difficult, right? There's no chiddush. What do you mean there's no chiddush? That when you lose your schus, when one of them gets lost, according to Rabbi Shmuel, why is that the case? If it's a loan, if it's a bal chov, why if it gets lost, you automatically lose your rights over here? I don't think that's so clear. But Tosfos is forced to do that because of the later cases of the Mishnah, which would be a question on the Havamino of the Gemara. Well, then Rashi learns that the Gemara is talking about the case in the Mishnah. Gemara has a Havamino that they should both be Chayav. The Gemara's conclusion, no, it's only according to Rabbi Akiva. That, and it means that when both of them together are there, you get your payment. If not, otherwise, no. According to Rabbi Shmuel, no matter what, you're going to get your payment because it's a loan, it's a right, debt outstanding, and you're going to get your payment.
So what does Rashi have to say? Well, according to Rashi, why do they force to say Shutafeininu if they're Balechov?
Now that's a Rabbi Shmuel. Only because Rabbi Shmuel, they're Balechov. But according to, if they're Balechov, then it doesn't matter that both animals are there or not there. They can both be gone. He still has to pay the money. Those are just the collateral. Rabbi Akiva,
so
on the other end.
The concept of Gufo.
Right. So Gufo means that I'm capped. I won't pay more than Gufo. Right? That's a cap on how much Nezek I'll pay, but that doesn't mean that I have to pay directly from this Gufo. Right, now, next to the new parrot. Shorshinagach Arbava Kamisha Shivarim Ze Achar Ze. And Shor got out on a rampage and goes ahead and damages four or five Shivarim. Yishalem Acharon Shvehem. He pays the last one first. Now this Shor remains a short time. Right, so how does it remain a short time? I would have said just the simple way that is that he'd gored four or five times without ever getting to din. Right, we had this machlokes back on Chaf Gimel Chaf Dalet about how do you establish the Tamam Muad? Does it have to do with how many times the shore damage versus how many times the bow damage? So because of that, Rashi explains the case here is actually that the Tam went ahead and gored. It gored one animal. Then it went ahead and saw two animals that it didn't gore. Then it gored the third animal. So he doesn't become a Muad because in the interim he saw other animals which he didn't gore. Then after he gores that animal again, he sees another two or three animals. Let's say three animals, doesn't gore them. And then gores the animal after that, the sixth or seventh animal that he sees, he gores. So now number one, he's not a mu'ad in all these cases because he keeps in the interim seeing animals that he doesn't gore. So that keeps the remains or maintains his status at the top. On the other hand, he can't do it on a pattern basis because if he becomes a pattern, for instance, if he gores every third shore, then he becomes a mu'ad for that, meaning that he becomes a mu'ad to gore every third shore. So it has to be that the number of shvarim that he sees in between his goring actually changes each time, so he doesn't establish any pattern. But because of this, this shore went ahead, this short time went ahead and damaged, right, four or five shores, shvarim, and it remains a short time throughout. Short time only pays me gufo, right, pays that of its goof. So when it pays me gufo, how much money does each of the shvarim that were damaged along the way get? The mitzvah suggests like this. That's the achron, yishalim the achron shvarim. The last one gets payment. If there's anything left over after the last one gets damaged, yachsiris levanos. Right, then it goes to the one prior. I mean, so the fifth one that got damaged gets collects his damages. Then it drops back to the fourth one. If there's any more left over after the fourth one gets paid for his damage, right? Yachsiris levanos. It goes back to the third one. So it means that the last one is the one that benefits, and that's what it means. Vakron akron yiskar divrei Rabbi Meir. That has to do, so the later you are in the damaging chain, the better off you are, because you'll get first payments before those that are before you get payments. Rabbi Shimon Omer, no. Rabbi Shimon says that's not the case. Shor shavim matayim, shnagach shor shavim matayim. If a shor that's worth 200, that's nagach a shor that's worth 200. Ve'en en avela yefek kum. In this case, the avela is worthless. So now, what is it? Zeh no tel mana. Vezeh no tel mana. Each one of them takes 100 of the animal. Chazar v'nagach. Right, then this shore goes ahead and gores another shore. Shore acher shavim matayim. Damages another shore. Ha'achron notel mana. Then this last shore gets 100. Ushavanav, zen notel chamishim zuz, zen notel chamishim zuz. The parties before them, the bow and the first damagee, collect 50-50. Chazar v'nagach, shore acher shavim matayim. Then it goes and damages another shore that's worth 200. Ha'achron notel mana. The last one gets full payment for his damages. Right, just like Rabbi Meir suggested. According to Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Meir, there's no difference with the last one. The last individual gets his 100, which is the half nezek. Right, on the other hand, what happens before him is what's different. According to Rabbi Meir, then you pay the next individual, like say the fifth or the fourth shore that was damaged. On the fourth shore that's damaged, half the nezek is 100. That person gets 100, both according to Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Meir. Now, according to Rabbi Meir, if there's any money left over, which we have here, Rabbi Shor was 200, if there's any money left over, it goes to the one before, the third Shor that was gored. The third Shor of gore was also worth 200, is now dead. His half nezek is 100. So according to Rabbi Meir, that's it. The fourth guy gets 100, the third guy gets 100, everybody before him loses out. Rabbi Shimon says, no, that the last guy gets 100, that's his full payment. The additional 100 that's left over now gets divided. Number 3 gets 50 of that 100, and the last 50 gets divided by the Baal and the first damagee, which will get 25 each. Right? So that's, the Rabbi Shimon says that it cascades down, and that there's money that is almost as if they're partners in it, which we'll see, which is what the Gemara says. Shadam Kamishim Zush, I'm Rishonim Dinar Zahab. Dinar Zahab is 25, so the first two parties get 25 and 25. So everybody gets a piece of the action, according to Rabbi Shimon, a piece of what's left over. According to Rabbi Meir, no, it cascades down. If only if there's left over, will you get money. It
trickles down.
Right, it trickles down. Matnitan Mani. Who is this Mishnah like? Deloka Rabbi Shmo, Udeloka Rabbi Akiva. This Mishnah neither follows Rabbi Akiva, nor, right, does it follow Rabbi Shmo. The Amari Bale, right, because Iki Rabbi Shmo, just like Rabbi Shmo, they're Bale Chovot, Ninhu, that each one of them is a Baal Chov, is a creditor over here. Hi, Acharon, Acharon, Niskar. Why is the last guy the most getting the most benefit over here? Right? Rishon, Rishon, Niskar, Mi Bale. Wait a minute. It should go to the first party first, meaning that when it comes to being a Baal Chov, the earlier you are a creditor, the more rights you have. So over here, if you think that these Nizakin are creditors, then the first Nizak should have priority to getting his money back because he's the first one to get damaged. Now, Rashi mentions over here, it's actually something that Tosfos mentioned in back on earlier on Daf Amud Gimel, Amud Bet. Tosfos mentioned it over here, over there. Rashi mentions it over here. Right, over there we mentioned that when you have a Nizak and a Baal Chov, that the Nizak takes priority no matter when it happened, whether he was before the Baal Chov or after the Baal Chov. But why? If the Nizak is also a Baal Chov, why do we say over there, they said there, that no, that the Nizak can make a claim, listen, wherever the Shor is, it's mine now, because whoever did damage, that Shor itself is responsible for it, I'm going to go take the Shor. Doesn't matter that you're a creditor, doesn't matter if it's the owner. Either way, it belongs to me. Why does he get such a priority, meaning that if he's a Baal Chov, why is his Chov, or his credit, worth better? Him being a creditor is better than a normal creditor. So Rashi mentions it over here. He says, because the Hasam who damer lei nizak the Baal Chov mihai tor dadzka mihnei mishtalimna. Baal Chov lo matzik the meimrei hachit. Because the nizak has the ability to say, that Shor did damage, that Shor is mine, because I get directed payment out of the Shor. The creditor can't say this. But over here in our case, all of them are on the same level. All of them are Baalei Chovim. What? Through being Nizak. Right? Through being a Nizak. The reason that they're all creditors here is not because they lent him money. They're all creditors here because they all got damaged. So they can all make the exact same claim. What's the same claim they can make? That Shor belongs to me. That Shor is mine. If that Shor is mine, I can collect out of it. And therefore, it should be the first one to get damaged that should have the rights. So the only time we make a differentiation in one creditor versus Nizak is when one of them is a real creditor, and one of them is a Nizak that became a creditor. That Nizak who became a creditor has better rights, because he actually really can collect out of his directed collateral. It's really his Shor now that it did damage, no matter where it's found or who it's owed to, because he needs to collect out of the body of the Shor. On the other hand, if they all have that same claim, then we would go to the first creditor. And the first creditor here is the first Nizak, and that's why, according to Rishmo, it should be Rishon Rishon Nizkar. Ether of Akiva, for Mishnah's like Rabbi Akiva, Damar Torah, the Shutvein, you know, that the Shor is a shutaf, meaning that they're partner to Hayesh Bo Motar Yachzer Lefanav, right? Lefanav, that when you have excess, you'll convey it to the one before you. Lukulami Bayalei, it should belong to all of them. Meaning that everybody's a shutaf in this animal, then they should have some joint ownership. Everybody, every nizak should have a piece of the Shor, not have it trickle down like Rabbi Meir does. Right? So now, Amarava, the Olam Kirabi Shmael. This Mishnah is like Rabbi Shmuel Dame Balei Chovot Ninu, that they're Balei Chovot. Oh, the Kashalach Acharon Acharon Nitzkar, Rishon Rishon Nitzkar Mi Balei, should be the other way around. Right, it's Halfa Maestina, the case here is, Kigon should Tapso Nizak Legavot Nimenu. The Nizak grabbed it, took possession of it, in order to make a claim from it. Benaseh Lav, Kishomer Sokhar, the Nizak in it becomes like a Shomer Sokhar. So what happened here? We have an animal that went out and did damage. Now what happens to the Nizak, the first person, we'll call him number one. Number one, who was damaged, right, goes and grabs the animal away from the Baal in order to get his payment. So now when he grabs the animal away from the Baal, he doesn't own the entire animal. He owns half the animal, or he's entitled to payment out of half the animal. The other half still belongs to the Baal. So when he grabs it away, he becomes a Shomer Sachar on the entire animal. Why does he become a Shomer Sachar on the animal? Because of the ease at which now he can collect. Because since the animal is present and here with him, he has the ability to collect his money. Because if not, if it's with the Baal could throw the animal out, send it out into the field, or let it go wild, and therefore the Nizak will no longer have the ability to come and make a claim because the Gufo was not available for him to collect from. So with the ease, or the ability for him to collect with ease from this animal, now makes him into a Shomer Sachar. That's what Rashi says. V'chein kulam natsu shomer sachar l'shmor chelek abalim b'hai hana d'mishtal min nizkayu. The fact that they're actually going to get paid for their damage, sure. The owners didn't just let it go out into the swamp, and then they'll have nothing to collect from anymore. So the fact that it's present, that the collateral is present, gives them some benefit. And then therefore they become a Shomer Sachar. Now, Tosfos says over here, that's only according to Rabbi Yishmael that they become a Shomer Sachar. But according to Rabbi Akiva, they are Shutfim. Right? So that's, you can't become a Shomer Sachar if you're Shutuf in the animal. You don't become, right, a Shomer Sachar, right? But you have to, Shomer Sachar, let me chalko, dalko, echad mutal di shmor chalko. And when you're a Shutuf, you're responsible to watch your piece of the action. But if it's, right, someone else's piece of the action, then if they're a Shutuf, they're responsible to watch their own piece of the, sure. According to Rabbi Shmuel, nobody's a Shutuf. You're not partners here. The Baal is always the owner over here. The original owner is always the owner, and when you take it, you become a Shomer Sachar over here. According to Rashi, that's not the case. According to Rashi, according to Rabbi Akiva, you'd also be a Shutuf. Why? Because you'd also be a Shomer Sachar. Why? Ain't no Hanami, then on the piece that you own, you're not a Shomer Sachar. You have to actually watch your own stuff. But on the other hand, the other piece that belongs to the other Shutufim, you are responsible for the rest, the other partnership owners, right? You're responsible. If you have the shore in your possession, then you're responsible to take care of your part plus their part over there. Right, you can't free him of that obligation. So the description says, no. When it comes to Shutfus, then each one is responsible, and we don't, even if it's in my possession, I have a right to have it here because I'm a partner. But that doesn't make me obligated to watch your portion. You have to take care of your portion, or you have to make sure that I'm taking care of it. So Rashi and Tosfos argue whether according to Rabbi Akiva, you would be a Shomer Sachar or not. But the Gemara nevertheless is setting up a point to Rabbi Yishmael. That's a lot of the Shomer Sachar, then he's the Zakin.
And all, and this whole, give and take is with respect to May or not, Rabbi Shimon.
Oh, right, okay, we're seeing. All right, so very good. Diyachi, so if that's the case, Yeshbo Motar, Yachzir L'Shafanav. What do you mean, if there's any excess left over, it goes back to the one before him? That's not true. Yachzir the Balim mi be'ayile, it should go back to the Balim. Why? Because the portion of the Balim now always remains belonging to the Balim. Because what happens? In the first time he damaged, the animal now damaged the first person, and now he owes the first person 100 shekel for the half damage. So the shore is worth 200. So the first one guy goes and grabs it. When he grabs it, he becomes a Shomer Sachar on this shore. This shore, half of it, 100 belongs to the Baal, 100 belongs to pay for his Nizakim. It goes out and damages now, right? When it goes out and damages, the Baalim's part of the animal is not his responsibility anymore. Why? Because the guy took it away from him. He's a Shomer Sachar on it. So that 100 should always go back to the original owner. So why do we mean we're giving the excess back to the other parties that were injured, the excess should go back to the Baal. The Baal, the original owner. So Marmar Ravina Achiktani, Im Yeshbo Motar bin Zakav, Yezek Yachzir Lishpanav. No. What does it mean, Motar? Motar doesn't mean excess of the entire animal. It means excess of the portion that is available to pay for the damage. So we said the original shore is worth 200. 100 of it now belongs to the original Baal, because he only has to pay half Nezek. The second 100 is what this guy grabbed it for his Nezek. Then it goes down and does damage. The only thing that will be split up among all those that are damaged is that second 100. So if there's excess left over from that 100...
The second shore is worth 100.
Right, say if the second shore is worth 100, or the third one's worth less and less, if they're worth less and less along the way, then if there's excess out of that 100, it'll trickle back down through the Nizakim. But the original 100, you're right, goes all the way back to the Baal, because we can't make him culpable for his 100 when they took it away from him. And they are Shomer Sacharim on the... Right? Shomer Sachar on that aspect of it. Right, so that, according to Rabbi Yochanan, it's Mishum Pshiat Shomrim Naguba. That is the reason, according to Rabbi Meir, that it trickles down to Nizakim, because each one of them became a Shomer Sachar, number one. And number two is, what, the Balim get their half back, because everyone's a Shomer Sachar. Now Gemara says, now you establish their mission to be Rabbi Yishmael. Yachi, so see your question. Yachi, ein matzeifa. What are you going to do with the second half of the Mishnah? Rabbi Shimon Omer, shor sheva matayim, shenagaf shor sheva matayim, v'nei navela yafek lum. If it's 200, the damage is at 200, and the veil is worthless, zed no tel mana, zed no tel mana. Chazar v'nagaf shor acher, sheva matayim, achron no tel mana, v'shalav rav, zed no tel 50, zuz, v'zed no tel 50 zuz. Chazar v'nagaf shor sheva matayim, achron no tel mana, v'shalav no tel 50, so the last one gets 100. The one before him gets 50. V'shalav v'shalav gets dinazar, split it, they get 25 each. What does that sound like? That sounds atan the Rabbi Kiva, damar Torah the Shutfehu. That sounds like what? According to Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi sounds like Rabbi Shimon in our Mishnah, it's going like Rabbi Akiva, who says that you're a shuta. Therefore, when the shore damaged the first time, the Baal, the owner, and the first Nizak become partners. Each of them now owns 100 of that shore. Now the shore goes up subsequent and damages its second party. Well, guess what? We each own half this shore. So when it comes to the half nezek, we're going to have to be partners and pay the half nezek that he did. So each of us is going to pay 50 towards that damage it did to the third party. So when it does to the party, now the third party owns 100 of the shore, and you and I, the Baal and the first damage, he owned 50 of it, right? They own 50. So they each own a quarter of the shore, and the last damage, he owns a half of the shore. Then the shore goes out again and damages. So now everybody has to pay in here. They have to pay 100. How are we going to get the 100 out of them? Right, we're going to say, listen, the person who owns half a shore, he's got to pay for half the damage. So he's going to lose 50. That goes towards the fourth person that was damaged. The first two, the Baal and the first damagee, they each own 50. They own a quarter of the animal. They're going to pay for a quarter of the damage. A quarter of 100 is 25. So they're each going to fork out 25. That means the last damagee gets 100. Gets 25 from the original Baal, 25 from the first damagee, 50 from the second damagee. Then he gets 100. Now what's left for the one before him? What's left for the one before him is 50, because he just paid 50 to the last one, he has 50 left. What's left for the original owner plus the first damage, they get 25 each. So that's basically, we are shutafim, we are partners all the way along. And that's exactly what it's saying. Shimon holds like Rabbi Akiva, that they're partners. Now, about this, Reisha Rabbi Shmuel, but Sefer Rabbi Akiva. So now you're setting up the Mishnah where Rabbi Meir is holding like Rabbi Shmuel, and Sefer Rabbi Shimon is holding like Rabbi Akiva. Or it says Emre'i? Yes, that is exactly the case. Damar le Shmuel the Rabbuta Shinina. Right, so Shmuel says to Rabbi Shinina, Shovuk Matnita and Betaba Tri. Leave our Mishnah alone and throw it out, or meaning Betaba Tri, or come after me. Don't try to explain this Mishnah according to one opinion. Come after me and I'll show you that this Mishnah is Reisha Rabbi Shmuel, the Seifa Rabbi Akiva. Ain't all Hanami. Rabbi Meir holds like Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shimon holds like Rabbi Akiva. And that is the explanation of our Mishnah over here. Right, so now, Rashi asks the question, why don't we establish that the whole Mishnah is Rabbi Akiva here? Okay, according to Rabbi Shimon, it's easy to understand why it's Rabbi Akiva. But why don't we explain that the first case, according to Rabbi Meir, is also a case of Rabbi Akiva? But according to Rabbi Akiva, you are a shutaf, right? You are a partner. If you're a partner, then how does Rabbi Meir come up with this idea that the last guy gets the most money, and then if there's anything left over, it goes down? So why not say the same thing we said for Rabbi Shmuel? According to Rabbi Shmuel, it also doesn't work. According to Rabbi Shmuel, right, the first person should get the most benefit, and the last Nizak should get the least amount of benefit. How come we said it doesn't work that way? Because he said it was a case where he was tafas. He grabbed it. So when he grabbed it, he becomes a shomer sachar on the animal, and therefore the last individual is the one who benefits the most, because each Nizak along the way became a shomer sachar and becomes responsible for the subsequent damage after him. So why don't we say the same thing in Rabbi Akiva? Instead of saying that, like Rabbi Shimon who says that they're shutafim, but they're shutafim as long as the other guy didn't grab it. But if he came along and grabbed it, then why does he become a shomer sachar? If he becomes a shomer sachar, then he will be the only one responsible. The Baal, the original Baal, will not be responsible. And you can say all along the chain that only the Nizakim are responsible because they are the ones grabbing it all the way along the chain, like we explained for Rabbi Shmuel. So Tosfos avoided the problem. Why? Because Tosfos says that you can only have a shomer sachar according to Rabbi Shmuel and not according to Rabbi Akiva. Tosfos says when you become a shutaf in an animal, when you're watching over that animal, you don't become a shomer sachar on your other partner's piece. You become either a shomer chinam or nothing. The other guy, he is the one who's responsible to make sure there's shmira here no matter where it is. On the other hand, according to Rabbi Shmuel, according to Tosfos, the reason you're a shomer sachar is because you don't have rights to this animal. It's not your animal. You're allowed to collect from it. It's collateral to you. But you're not, it's not your animal. And the other individual, the Baal, when you take it away from him, it's whole as animal. So you become a shomer sachar on the Baal's piece of this animal. Rashi says no, Rashi disagrees and says no. Even according to Rabbi Akiva, you become a shomer sachar on the other piece. So according to Rashi, this becomes a problem. Why not explain Rabbi Meir in our Mishnah according to Rabbi Akiva, where he was tofes it, and you can set up the exact same case of Shomer Sachar. So Rashi says you can't do that over here. Although Rabbi Akiva, right? Why do you have to? He says because according to Rabbi Akiva, that wouldn't be a chiddush. Right? According to Rabbi Shmuel, you're forced to say that the case in the Mishnah is a case of tofes. Case of tofes. Otherwise, according to Rabbi Shmuel, the Mishnah doesn't work at all. So therefore, the only way to explain Rabbi Shmuel is where he's tofes. According to Rabbi Akiva, right? There's another way to explain the Mishnah. You don't have to explain the Mishnah according to Tfisa, you can just explain the Mishnah according to Shutfus. So the fact that you go and say, oh, according to Rabbi Akiva, it's a case of, right, of Tfas makes no sense, because that does, you don't need to get the Tfas to have the Akron Niskar according to Rabbi Akiva. You can come up with a case of Akron Niskar when they are Shuta Fim. So the fact that the Mishnah would go out of its way to make a case of Tfas instead of Shutfus doesn't make so much sense. According to Rabbi Shmuel, it's the only way to get Achron Niskar. According to Rabbi Akiva, there are two ways to get Achron Niskar. And why do we go out? Why did Rabbi Meir go out of his way to find the case of Tufas instead of the case of Shutfus? He should have just said, like Rabbi Shimon, and make it a case of Shutfus. The fact that Rabbi Akiva has two possibilities makes him impossible to be the author of the first half of the Mishnah, according to Rashi. Because it could have been. He could have been the author. But he can't be because it's not a Chiddush. It doesn't make sense to explain it that way. But according to Tosfos, Rabbi Akiva could never have been the author of the first half of the Mishnah because he doesn't believe that you can be a Shomer Sachar when you are Shutafim in the animal. Okay, now, the next part of the Gemara is an interesting Gemara because it's going to bring a proof from our Mishnah. It's not related to our Gemara, but it's related only because the Gemara is going to try to bring a proof from our Mishnah. It's not. Hadam, we have a Mishnah over there. It's Tokeh L'Chaveiro. So I'm going to Tokeh L'Chaveiro. It's Tokeh L'Chaveiro. Rashi gives two explanations, right? It's further on in the Masechta. Either one possibility is that the person comes along and smashes his hand right outside the ear of the individual. He claps his hands, it doesn't make a loud noise outside of it. The other possibility is that he blew a shofar or he actually screamed right into the ear of the individual. Either way, he caused damage. Look, Averro, no same lo sella. Right, so that's the made boshet, the chamim assigned. The value of the boshet that the individual must pay for doing such an action is a sella. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mishum Rabbi Yossi Agili, maneh. That he pays him 100 zuz. Right, he pays the sella, which would be, we learned before, is 4 zuz. They pay the 4 zuz, or a maneh is a, right, 100 zuz. So now, how gavra, the taka lechavre. So the one this individual did such a thing, he did his tzikia unto his friend's hand, shalchei rab tukya bar matan lekameh to Rav Yosef. He sent a message to Rav Yosef, sela tzuritnan or sela mezinatnan. When we have this din that is established in the Mishnah, that you pay a sela, there are two types of coinage that you could count it on. You can count on what's put in coinage, the current coinage, or sella medina, the current coin of a sella, or you can go sella tsuri, which is the Torah's silver standard. So the Torah's silver standard is actually 8 times, right, the size of the current coinage. So if you talk about a sella tsuri, that really means what? 8 sella medina, right? That's it. The relationship is 8 times, right, the differential in value. So now, it is important, and we'll see later on, I'll show you why it's important, but here is he wants to know, when we have to pay this knas, is he paying the sela medina, or is he going to pay out of the sela tsuri, which would be 8 times the amount? So he says, Amarle tinitua. We learned this already. Our Mishnah is proof. Why is our Mishnah proof? Ushnaim arishonim dinar zahav. The first two split it down to a dinar zahav. What's a dinar zahav? We said a dinar zahav is 25 zuz. Right, 25 zuz is a gold coin, right? That comes out to 25 zuz. Visa kadatka tani tana sela medina. If our Mishnah is talking about a case of sela medina, right, it's not using the currency of the Torah, but rather sela medina, niflo gunitne atresar the sela. Then you could have divided it up even further. The Mishnah only wanted to use whole coins. When it did all this damaging, right, along the way, we said the first one was 100. Second one was 50. The next one was 25. They only wanted to do things that had whole coins to them. So what's the lowest standard you can get to with a whole coin? That's a dinar zahav, which gives you 25 zuz. Now that's true, what? That's true if you're talking about sela tsuri. If you're talking about the silver standard of the Torah, then you can talk about getting to 25. A dinar zahav is the lowest denomination. But that's not true if you're working with sela medina. Right? What's the relationship between a sella medina and sella tsuri? We said what? That a sella of the Torah is 8 times the sella of the current denomination of the current currency. How much do we say? How many zuz are there in a sella? We said there are 4 zuz in a sella. Right? So a sella tsuri has 4 zuz. Now if I look at a Sela Medina, how much is a Sela, how many zuz are in a Sela Medina?
Half
a zuz. So if that's the case, right, I could have come up with whole coins that could explain the next level down of damage. Say, for instance, instead of there being only four parties in the Mishnah, where one's getting 100, the next one's getting 50, and the next two are getting 25, I could have gone one more level and said, the first one's getting 100, the second one's getting 50, right, the third one is getting 25, and the last two are getting 12 and a half. Wait, 12 and a half, we don't want to talk about half coins, but I can explain to you 12 and a half with whole coins. Why? I would say 12 zuz plus a Sela Medina. Sela Medina is half a zuz. So I could have said 12 trace star zuz, the Sela. And then I could add these whole coins to explain the Mishnah. The fact that the Mishnah didn't do that shows me that it's talking about Sela Suri and not Sela Medina. Amalei, he says, why is that a proof? Tana Kibuchlo Litnei Beleza? He says, what do you mean? Just because the Tana has the ability to do it and didn't do it isn't any proof. What do you want it to go? Keep going, 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 going? He made his point already. By doing it already four parties, he already showed you what it means to be a Shuta. Now he has to create a fifth party just to show you that you can get the whole coin? That's not necessary. So that, you can't prove anything from our Mishnah. The fact that he can go down to the next level could either be because he's talking about Sela Suri and not Sela Medina, or the reason is because it wasn't necessary. Going down another level doesn't add any more information for us, doesn't explain to us any more about what it means to be a Shuta over here. So that's where it says, my Haviyala, what's the din? Bashtua mihad amar Yehuda marav, they answered it up from the din of amar Yehuda marav, kol kesef amur batorah kesef tzuri. Any money, denominations, currency that is written in the Torah will always be denominated based on kesef tzuri, the silver standard of the kesef tzuri of the Torah. Vishal zivreim, any din that is dirabonon. Anytime you're talking about money, dirabonon, kesef medina. That will be based on the current denominations, the current currency. So over here, when we're talking about someone who does this damage in his ear, he's paying boshet. The amount of boshet is a din dirabonon. So when you're talking about a din dirabonon, we're going to say what? That it is Sela, right? Medina. So that'll be your answer over here, that it's talking about a Sela Medina. Tosfos over here says that this din of Amar Yehuda Marav only applies to Sela. Their din is explaining only Sela. When you talk about a Sela, then we talk about, right, in the Torah, a Sela means, or Shekel means, Kesef Tzuri. And we talk about it in the Medina, or Ibrahim, that'll be the current currency. But other coinage is always done on, what, Kesef Tzuri. Everything is Kesef Tzuri. What's his proof? His proof is from, like, Ksuba. When you talk about a Ksuba, right, the Machlokas in the Garden Ksuba, so the Ksuba is the Oraisa, or Ksuba is the Rabbanan. But according to both parties, whether it's the Rabbanan or the Oraisa, they both pay 200 zuz. Wait a minute. If there's a difference between the Oraisa and the Rabbanan in coinage, not only will there be a difference in 200 zuz and being the Rabbanan, or 200 zuz being the Oraisa, there'll actually be a difference between whether it's 200 or 25. Meaning that according to the one who says Doraisa, it's classified out of the Doraisa, it'll be worth, right, 200 coins of the Suri, right, that? Which is equivalent, if you come out of 200 of Medina, it'll only be worth 25 zuz. Meaning that it's 1/8 of the amount of Doraisa. How come the Gemara Ksubos never says that according to one who says Dorabonon, you pay only 25 zuz? According to one who says Doraisa, you pay 200 zuz because the coinage would be different. So it doesn't say that's a proof that the coinage is always the same except for Sela. This differential between Dirabonan and Doraisa only has application when we talk about Sela. Talk about these coins of the Sela, then one is Sela Suri and one is Sela Medina. When you talk about other denominations of coinage, it's always based on Suri. It's always based on Suri, and therefore when the Ksuba, when the Machlokas says Doraisa and Dirabonan, they both agree that the coinage is 200. Other Rishonim disagree, and they're going to have to explain why in certain instances we don't have that differential between Doraisa and Dirabonan. They either say that the Ksuba is Ke'in Doraisa, they did a Kemar Abdulot, right? There are reasons to say that even when it's Dirabonan, it was patterned after the Doraisa payment, and therefore the coinage is Doraisa. But nevertheless, it's so important to us that this application of Yehuda Rav only applies to a seller. The next thing, Amaleo Gavra, Hoil, so now we have this next case here, which is Amaleo Gavra, Hoil Palka Zuzahu, right? Lobina Nitvelanim. There was a case here, where this case that we sent to Rav Yosef, and he said over here that this guy had hit outside of his ear, did this noise out of his ear. The Nizak is prior to made boshet of half a zuz. As we just said now, anything the Rabbanan is done in Sela Medina, that means that if you're entitled to a Sela, that's worth a half a zuz. So if I get a half a tzitzis, he says, you know what, listen, it's not worth it to me. I'm more embarrassed to take the half tzitzis than the embarrassment of the damage he did me. Give the half tzitzis to the aniyim. So Hadar Amar, no, nifei niyale. And he says, you know what, no, don't give it to the aniyim. Yisrael ve'ivrei bein nafshei. So Rashi says, I'll go use it to pay for my doctor bill, so because that can't be the case, because the other guy's chayef is repoy. Right? It's not, he says, Dad, let me go and use it, let me make myself healthy, I'll go have a nice meal on it. So I'll use that half tzitzis. So he changed his mind. This individual got damaged. He was entitled to the maple. Shut up. Half a tooth. First he says, give this half a tooth to the aniyim. Then he changes his mind. He says, no, you know what? I'm going to keep it. Amar le Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says to him, farzaku be aniyim. The aniyim already took possession of it. V'afagav the lek aniyim hocha. Even though there are no aniyim standing here with us, anon yad aniyim anon. We are like the representatives of the aniyim. Since we are obligated to take care of the aniyim, and Tavrashi says that Rav Yosef was the gabai of the aniyim, he's the gabai tzaka. I am the yad aniyim, and I took possession of it for them. Damar Rav Yudam Rav Shmuel, we have a proof from this. Why? The Gemara in Gittin says, you told me I made him tzrich and puzbol. Why don't orphans need a puzbol? So why do you need a puzbol? A puzbol is to ensure that the Shemitah is not mishamet the loans that are there. How do we ensure that they are not mishamet the loans? You're moser shtarotah the basin. You give over your shtarot to basin. So what happened to these homies? They didn't hand over the shtarot to Basin. How come they don't need a puzbol to say that? Says the Chaim Tanya Rabbi Chama, you told me to compose. Well, why? Rabbi Gamliel Basin, you know, I'm sure you told me, Mayu. Rabbi Gamliel and his Basin are the fathers of the Yitomim. Meaning that, not that Rabbi Gamliel and Basin know only, but any, they're their Basin Chashuv. But any Basin is responsible to ensure that the Yitomim get the best of the best. It's the responsibility of the Basin to always to be Mahapech Mitzchutayim. To take care and make sure that the Yisomim get the best deal. What's the best deal for the Yisomim over here? Is to have Beis Din be the ones who are holding their shtarot. So by definition, Beis Din is already holding their shtarot because that is the best situation for the Yisomim. So despite the fact that they don't actually do it, they don't actually put out a puzbol, it's as if the Beis Din is holding the shtarot for them. So if that's the case, right, same thing over here by Aniyim. Even though the Aniyim are not present, we're going to say Rabbi Yosef was the Gabay Tzaka, and he's holding the money. He's taking it as if he took it for the Aniyim already. Zochen it for the Aniyim. Now, it's a very important Tosfos over here. The Tosfos has, the Riff talks about it. It's actually the Riff. Now, Tosfos mentioned something that's mentioned in the Riff. But we have other Gemaras that deal with Tzaka. And we have to reconcile all these Gemaras with our Gemara over here. So listen to this. The Im Tomar, look at Tosfos. Last Tosfos on Lamed Bavam and Bez. It says, Im Tomar, below Yad Aniyim, Nami Chayit Tzaka Be'amira. Wait a minute. When you speak out, when you orally say, I'm going to give tzedakah, you become responsible for that tzedakah. Because the Gemara in Erechim says, beficha. When you say something, you say with something with your mouth, you're responsible for tzedakah. Right? Whatever goes out of your mouth, you have to keep. Motzei, right? Motzei tzedakah tishmor. Right? Because you have to take care of what you say. And if you declare that you're going to give tzedakah, you're responsible to give it. Over here, he says, I'm giving it to Aniyim. Why does it matter that Rabbi Yosef is here? As soon as he says, I'm giving it to Aniyim, now you're responsible to give that tzedakah. The Yosh Lomar, doesn't make one distinction here. The Kamosh Ein Adam Makdish Devar Shelo Balulam, just like a person can't make Hekdesh, something that he doesn't own, right, that's not there yet. Hakanami Ein Adam Notain Tzaka Devar Shelo Balulam. He doesn't have the money yet. It's owed to him by the Mazik. He can't, when he says, I'm giving it to Aniyim, that's not a commitment that he can make yet, because it's not in his possession yet. Just like if he was Makdish that money, it wouldn't be Hekdesh, because it's still in the possession of the Nizah. What he can't say, right, if you skip down one line and so it's going to line right, it says, Nahi Shimaya Umer Khubzeh. If he says, when this guy takes me to Hashefa, I'm gonna be Maktishit, then it's Tophis. And in that case, the Hekdesh works. So to over here, all the Tzaka, if he says over here, when I get to have Zuz, it will go to Tzaka, then he would be obligated. Domesh to Khayab Mitam Nether. Then he'd be Khayab because he took a nether to Tzaka. About that, in our case of that's not what he said. Lomar came. Alomar, smell the aniyim. Just give it to the aniyim. That's not a nether, because you can't make a nether of something that's not yet in your possession. That's one halacha. The second halacha comes from the Beinu Chananel, that the Rebbeinu now prayers, Zeloa Yerotze Lachzor, Bominet Tzaka, that he didn't want to stop the Tzaka here. He was going to give the money to Tzaka. Ah, why did he say, give it back to me? Eloa Yerotze Lachzor, Lefisha'ah, Lachzir Achar Le Aniyim Tachtav. He wanted the coin back. He says, you know what, I need the coin right now. I need to spend the money right now. I'll pay the tzedakah. I'm obligated to the tzedakah because I already made a nether. Since I made a nether tzedakah, I'm obligated to it. But I want to borrow the coin. So, Amalei, Rav Yosef, Yad Aniyim Anon. We're the extension of Aniyim. Zachinim Bo, B'mamad Shloshtan. Right, the second kinyan that you can have, which is called mamad shloshtam. When you have mamad shloshtam, which just means that I have the giver, the receiver, and the other party here. Who's the giver over here? It's the mazik. Who's the recipient over here? The nizak. Who is he trying to give it? The third party, which is the aniyim. Since Rav Yosef is the aniyim here, he becomes the mamad shloshtam, and all three parties are there, and it's a kinyan. Because of mamad shloshtam, he now cannot reverse it. Why? Because we have an erechin that says Omer Zela to the tzedakah. When I say that Zela goes to tzedakah, Ashva Baliya Gabai Musar Lishnon Tov. If it doesn't reach the head of the Gabai, you can switch which coin you're giving to tzedakah. Once the Gabai gets a hold of it, you can't go say, "Oh, give me that coin back. I want to switch it for another coin." That you can't do once it reaches the hand of the Gabai. So very, very important halachos that come out of this. It's brought down in Shulchan Aruch halacha based on this tosfos, this rib. That is explaining this Gemara. That number one, if you make a commitment to give tzedakah, if a person says that he's going to give tzedakah, he is obligated to give the tzedakah. You can't back out of it. That's a nether that you can't reverse. On the other hand, if you say, "I'm going to give tzedakah," that's something that's not yet in your possession. That is not an obligation, because just like you can't be makdish something that's not in possession, you can't give tzedakah from something that is not in your possession. On the other hand, if you say, "When it comes into my possession, I will give it," the tzedakah, that becomes like a nether. Just like by hekdesh, you can do the same thing. When it comes into my possession, it will be hekdesh, that's tofes. So to by tzedakah, that will be a nether. Now, when it comes to giving tzedakah, when you say, "I'm going to give a certain coin or a certain something to tzedakah," you are allowed to change that item. The obligation is on the gavra. You are responsible to give the tzedakah. You can't get out of that. But the exact item that you give does not become, right, belong to the aniyim until either the gavai tzedakah gets it. And until it gets to the hands of the gavai tzedakah, then you can't change the item. The item that went is the one that must stay, right? Or if we have a case of mamad shloshtam, a case where someone's obligated money to you, and then you bring in the gavai tzedakah, if he's there when you make that statement, that already makes it part of the Yad Gabai. And once it's a kinyan by the Gabai Tzedakah, or the representative of the aniyim, you can't take back that coin, you can't reverse that. The obligation, according to everyone, is there. The question whether you can take back the coin is only whether there's a kinyan done by the aniyim yet, right? Whether the aniyim or the Gabai Tzedakah did a kinyan. So all these are important halachos when it comes to tzedakah. I'm just going to finish up to the Mishnah here. So it says, Kana Bisha, Takalei the Hau Gabra. Hanan Bisha, obviously he is, we'll see in a second why he's called Hanan the Evil. He did this tzedakah, he blew his horn into somebody's ear. After the Kamei Rabuna came before him, and still have lay palga the zuzah. You have to go pay him half zuz. That's the bullshit that you pay for such an instance. To have lay zuzah, mako. He had this bad zuz. He only had a coin that was a zuz, but it was the image on the coin was worn out, so it really wasn't kind of not a full zuz. It would be dokas, people would accept it as a full zuz. So he wanted to give it to the nizak and get changed back. But nobody was willing to give him the change back because nobody thought it was really worth the full zuz. So by the mitzvah lay mina paga zuzah. He wanted the nizak to give him back the other half zuz that he was owed him because he was only had to pay half a zuz. Lo hava mishtaka lay. He wouldn't accept this coin, this full zuz. So what does Kana Bisha do? Instead of getting his change back, he couldn't get his half zuz back. Takalei akrina of yarvei lay. He blew his horn or he screamed into the ear of this individual so that he says, "You know what, now I owe you zuz. Take the money and now you don't have to give me any change back." That's obviously why he's called Hanan Bisha over here, because instead of dealing with the issue, he obligated himself to be chayv a full zuz instead of half zuz, so he didn't have to worry about the change. The last thing I want to mention is the Tosfos on the top of Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph mentions this idea by the Tomim. By the Tomim, we say that it's as if the Eitzin took possession of the Shtarot. So Tosfos says that's good if the milva is bichtar, if the milva is bishtar. What happens if there's milva peh? How do we take care of the Tomim over here? So Tosfos says the Yishlomar. It's as if they gave over the collection rights of their loan. When it's a milva peh, when it's a oral loan, it's as if they gave over collection rights to the basin. Not only when we have shtarot, it's as if it's Moshe shtarot the basin, but by Yitomim to protect them, again, that we have the obligation to be mahapek and shkutayu to take care of them. That means when they have an outstanding loan, we say, basin now is the collection agency for these individuals. And even if the lovet, even if the debtor has no karka, then Beizin is koner, makna them karka in order to ensure, right, that the Yisomim are protected. So again, Tosfos says that this idea that we protect the Yisomim goes beyond just simply if there's shtarot there and we say zip the shtarot belong to Beizin. But even if there are no shtarot there, we say that Beizin now takes possession of the loan, they become the collection agency for it. And even when the lover has no property and you can't write a cruise bowl usually and you can't have most of the shtarot of the Beizin, we say Beizin gives them the lover as if they gave over land to the lover to ensure that the Yisomim are protected. That's how far that we are demanded, or basin demanded to protect the Yisomim, that we'll do anything. We'll say any halachic, right, solution to ensure that Yisomim get what they need. Okay, we'll stop over here.